Hello, Gallatin Valley. You are listening to 95.9 FM KGVM Bozeman. I am Siobhan O'Steele, and this is Body Politic. In the past couple shows on Body Politic, we've been talking about the legislature up at Helena and what they've been doing with the slate of hate. And that is basically a rack of bills that are pointedly against anything trans. And last week we talked about Senate Bill 99, which limits health care for trans youth. Another big bill that's been making its way through the legislature is House Bill 359, and it's being called the Drag Ban Bill. And that bill has certain language in it that will basically make it so any business that hosts drag shows or anything like that is considered a sexually oriented business. Basically, it's going to be considered akin to a strip club. The language basically says that anyone under 18 is not allowed to attend any kind of a drag show for any reason. And if anybody hosts a drag show where children can attend, then it's criminal. And I really wanted to speak to a actual person who's been in drag for a while, who I would consider an expert on drag. So welcome to the show, Donald Stuker, who performs as Hex Shadow. Now, if you've ever attended any of MSU's QSA drag shows, any of those barn burners, you probably have seen Hex Shadow as the MC of the show. So welcome, Donald. And could you tell me, first of all, who is Hex? And tell me a little bit about the House of Shadow.
Well, thank you so much for having me on today. Really looking forward to doing this segment with you. So Hex Shadow was born in about 2009, in that realm in Missoula would be when I started performing. And it sort of started out almost as a joke. I'd been running around with a lot of drag performers in Missoula at the time. And one of the performers, you know, we used to have this show called the Turnabout Show. And so everybody that normally came as a, you know, male presenting would come as female and vice versa. And we were getting ready for this Turnabout Show. And somebody said, and I suppose you'll just come in a nice jacket. And I said, well, you never know. Maybe I'll come in drag. And this drag queen goes, well, you'd try, sweetie. And so as a joke for this Turnabout Show, I showed up and, you know, full face and had somebody, you know, paint my face on and help me, and wore this, you know, red Jessica Rabbit dress. And one of the drag queens at the time, you know, I was trying to figure out what to call myself. And she goes, well, spending time with you is like a bad spell. Call yourself Hex. And that was sort of where my name came from. So Hex has really grown over the years. You know, I did that initial performance, that initial appearance, and it was fun. But more than that, I saw the impact it had on my community and the people around me and, you know, the few drag performers that Missoula had at that time. And I found a lot of camaraderie there. And so I stuck with it. And over the years, Hex has really grown. I would say she was never really a sexy drag queen. But definitely, as the years go on, she has gotten more and more matronly. So that's really who, you know, how Hex came to be. Who she is a stage persona that is a little irreverent. At appropriately aged shows, she can be a little filthy. And she really just wants to see safe spaces for her community. And that's really, you know, at Hex's core, she's the, you know, eternal auntie or the eternal grandmother. She's the stage presence that is at her best and her happiest when she's surrounded by her family and her community.
Wow. You know, a lot of what you said really resonated with me, and you know, that safe space thing. And I'll probably get back to that a little bit later. But right now, I'd like to ask you about just what is drag to you? And how do you see that it's different from other forms of gender variance, like, transgender or even cross dressers? Tell me a little bit about that.
So I can tell you what drag means to me and what I've observed about drag, but I want to start by saying I think it's very different for everybody. Everybody comes at drag from a different perspective and we all take different things from it. So for me, drag is a stage performance that allows me to engage with my community in a way that everyone recognizes. It's also a way to play with gender. It's a way to decompress, to help process. And I think drag is really at its core playing with gender norms, with societal norms, with the roles that society is telling us, okay, you are a boy, you dress this way, you act this way, you live your life this way. And I think drag is really a way for me to sort of turn that on its ear and say, yeah, I'm an attorney. I work on a ranch part-time. I enjoy renovating old houses. And on some Saturday nights, I put on a ball gown and a great big wig, and I go and raise money for charity. And all of those things can exist in a single space, in a single person. You get to be all of those things. And I think that's what I've taken from drag. Now, when we start talking about how does this differ from, other types of gender variance, I'm going to move into sort of what I've observed, and that is that for some people, it is distinct and separate. Drag is a performance. It doesn't impact necessarily how they perceive their gender, how they present their gender. But I'll also say I've observed an awful lot of people that get into drag and it's still a performance. It's still something that they're putting on to help raise money for charity or to entertain people, but they also learn something from it. And I've seen it impact their own understanding of their gender identity. And I think for those individuals, it's not quite as distinct a difference, between drag and their lived experience being transgender or gender fluid. And so as much as I say drag is a way for me to sort of turn the gender norms on its ear, I also think for some members of our drag community, it's been a way for them to explore their own gender identity in a safe way, in a way that is received well. And I think that's beautiful. I think it's incredible that they have that opportunity to sort of play around with it and help figure out who they are.
Yeah, I think you've really described well what I think is the joy of drag, and also the safe space that it provides for people that might be gender questioning, or might just be out for a good time, because most of it is just a good time. Now, I wanted to ask a little bit about the history of drag in Montana. We have a pretty long history of drag in Montana. And I actually tried to look up when the ISCSM, the Imperial Sovereign Court of the state of Montana, was established, because I know it was a long time ago, maybe even before my time. But their website was updating that part of the website, so I couldn't find the establishment date. You wouldn't happen to know that, would you?
As a matter of fact, I do.
Awesome.
So the ISCSM's website is in progress, as you noted. So for people that are listening, the Imperial Sovereign Court of the state of Montana is one of the oldest queer nonprofits in the state. It is the oldest drag nonprofit in the state. It was founded in 1993. Is the incorporation date that the Montana Secretary of State has listed for it. Sort of an interesting well, sort of fun fact about it. I think it's interesting. So the Imperial Sovereign Court is of the state of Montana is part of something called the International Court System, the ICS. The ICS was founded in San Francisco by Jose Saria in 1964 or 65, I believe. And currently there's 70 chapters, 70 some odd, throughout Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And they're all, you know, charity-based nonprofits that produce shows and events and support their local communities. And so the Imperial Sovereign Court of the state of Montana is one of those. Now, prior to the ISCSM being created in 1993, there was actually an earlier initiative in based out of Billings, I believe, in 1989. And in 1989, they created an organization that was called the Imperial Sovereign Court of the Big Sky Empire. And there's a fabulous, fabulous gentleman in Billings that I can put you in touch with, or, you know, if people want to get the history on that. But that initiative lasted for a couple of years and then dissolved under some social pressure and different issues that they were having. And then in 1993, with the help of our siblings in Spokane, Washington, we founded the, well, not we, me, sort of the royal we, Montana's drag community, founded the ISCSM.
Awesome. And that brings me to, you know, drag as a social good. And this is where I'm going to tell a little bit of a personal story about what drag has done for me. Back when I was just coming out as transgender, this was a time before very much was known about transgender people, and there was not a lot of support in the state. I really thought that I was probably pretty much alone in the whole state as a transgender person. So I started looking for people like online, if I could, you know, that I could commiserate with or, you know, learn from. And I just wasn't finding anything. But what I did find was the ISCSM. And they talked about they were going to have a drag show at what was then called Club Q in Missoula. And I decided, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to dress as myself. And I'm just going to see if there's anybody that understands me or that I can socialize with. And I was scared to death. You know, it's my first time actually in public as myself. And when I showed up, you know, I was kind of sticking to the wall because I was actually intimidated by drag queens at the time. They were so glorious and so beautiful and, you know, outlandish and witty in a way that I didn't feel that I was up to. And so I just was kind of sticking to the wall, basically being a spectator. And a couple of people saw me. You know, saw that I was looking scared and hiding in the shadows, and they came and got me. I mean, they basically walked right up to me, introduced themselves, you know, said, "What are you all about?" You know, and they kind of brought me out of my shell. They made me feel safe. They made me feel like, you know, I could be totally myself there. I could be honest. You know, I told them that I was actually trans, not really drag. And they totally accepted that and gave me that safe space. And, you know, I came out of that show feeling like I was not alone anymore. And the whole world kind of brightened from that. And then a little bit later, you know, I got kind of emboldened, but I felt like drag shows were really the only place that I could still be myself. So whenever there was a drag show, I tried to attend, and I decided, well, you know, I might even just try drag because, you know, I'm gender variant. Why not? I should be able to do this. And there was an event because I actually live in Bozeman, so Missoula was far away for me. But there was an event in Livingston, of all places, called the Dragon Hoot at the time. And it was at a cowboy bar in downtown Livingston called the Owl. And actually found, you know, the people that ran the show. I said, you know, I'd really like to perform. And they said, okay, send us some songs and you can perform. And it was a really good time. I mean, I loved it. Everybody knew I was a newbie. They just took me under their wing. They gave me advice. They helped me out. They encouraged me. They said I did a great job. Which I didn't. I didn't do a great job. And I didn't look the part because I didn't know the art of drag. And it is an art. You can't just identify as a woman and be a drag performer. That just doesn't work. And you have to have, that kind of outlandish personality to be, in my mind, a good drag performer. So no, I wasn't really good, but I still had a good time. And it's funny that, most of the audience were cowboys and they were loving it. They were laughing and having a great time. It's kind of weird that we're having this drag ban even discussed in Montana, because I felt like there were enough people that understood what it is and wouldn't buy into the hype that it's something bad, some kind of a social ill. So
So,
that's, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to ask because I'm curious. So, the Dragon Hoot show, the people that produced that, was that one of Electra Sexton's shows?
Yes. Yes, it
Okay.
was. And
I,
Electra
it,
Sexton was larger than life. I mean, she was a goddess. I mean, when I got to meet her in real life for the first time, I was starstruck.
she was, she, I mean, is incredible. She doesn't perform as much anymore, but. I guess the reason I asked that question is, when we talked about the history of drag in Montana, I really focused on the ISCSM, but I do want to give credit. I mean, just the people that I know over the years, Elektra did amazing things producing shows on, the Bozeman side of the state. She produced in Livingston, Natasha Quimby, and the QSA at the university have been producing shows for a long, long time. You
Yeah.
know, in Missoula, we had, different groups over the years, the Groovy Bouviers and Bouvier Family Theater, where people like Ophelia Bouvier took drag out of a bar and put it on a stage and did, full theatrical productions that were drag based. You had people like the famous divas, Jade LaRose and Mama Rosalinda de la Luna, that were, producing these events outside of the ISCSM and really helping to grow what drag was in Montana. So just sorry to jump backwards, but listening to
Yeah.
your sort of experience there, I really wanted to circle back around and say, the history of drag in Montana is exactly what you articulated. It is creating those spaces, welcoming people, and I'm really, really glad that you got to have that experience.
I am too. I don't think that I would myself be where I am today if it wasn't for that support and that safety that I got from them. And then, one more thing about my experience with the Dragon Hoot is that and this is where I want to get to drag as a social good. Not only did I have a safe space to explore my gender, figure out that I'm not a drag queen for sure. I also, I got some tips, and I remember that, when you went into the backstage area and you came in with your armload of dollar bills, those dollar bills all went into a box. And I asked what that box was for, and that box was going to charity. And that's one thing I don't know if everyone realizes about drag in Montana, and why drag is such a social good is almost always, as far as I know, there's some kind of a charity associated with most drag events that benefits from, the door take and at least a portion of the tips. So, yeah, I just was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that kind of philanthropy that drag does as a social good.
Yeah, I mean, looking specifically at the philanthropic endeavors that we have, I think it's safe to say that the majority of the drag shows that take place in Montana are still charity-based drag shows. They're either produced on behalf of nonprofits. So, for instance, Montana Pride, we produce several shows. Shadow House actually is responsible for those in Helena. But we produce several shows to sort of enrich the festival. Beyond that, the ISCSM shows, all of the shows that they do, the door and everything else, goes to their own internal charities. So they operate a scholarship fund, they operate, you know, a contribution fund, and then they'll also go out and do, you know, shows on behalf of organizations that need money. So one great example is the Outlaws, the queer legal group at the School of Law in Missoula. Every year the ISCSM helps produce that, and all of the funds, you know, benefit the Outlaws group. It's interesting you bring this up, because I've watched a shift happening lately, and it's been a conversation among all of the performers, you know, across the state. It used to be that every show, every time, all of the tips went into the charity and all of the door, and, you know, we were funneling all of this money at it. And lately we've started having really good conversations around that and asking ourselves, okay, does giving away all of the tip money present a barrier to other people joining in drag and participating in drag? Because at that point, you know, we're asking these performers to put on really elaborate costumes and spend a lot of time working on dance numbers that sometimes necessitates renting, you know, space to practice. And there's all of these expenses that are borne by the performers. Does us taking all of their money at the end of their number make it so that some people can't get up there and join us? And so something that we've been experimenting with the last few years is certain shows, we now allow performers to keep their tips. That's sort of a decision that we've reached, and we're slowly moving more and more in that direction. Now, the two things I'll say on that are, one, don't be mistaken, we are still all losing money doing this. I can say with 100% certainty, there is not a single drag performer in the state of Montana that is paying their bills with their performances. We're still giving the lion's share of the money to charity, but we are sort of realizing that if drag is going to continue in Montana, if we're going to continue doing the good works beyond our philanthropic endeavors, we need to find a good balance where the performers are not, you know, raiding their piggy banks to go out and buy sequins for next weekend's show type of thing.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to mention too, you were talking about some of the charities that you know that they've given to, and a lot of them were LGBT charities, and that's great. But just to point out that if anybody's listening to this and thinking, oh, well, they only give to themselves, well, the truth is they give to a lot of other people too. I know for a fact that the Bozeman drag shows have benefited organizations like Haven, you know, the women's shelter, and the food bank of Gallatin Valley. You know, these are, you know, regular charities, not necessarily LGBT related, that benefit everybody.
So building on that, you're exactly right. What I normally tell people is the money that we contribute to the community goes to everything from free HIV testing to food banks. We've donated to the symphonies in Bozeman before. We've donated to HRDC's Blueprint program, which focuses on youth homelessness. We've donated to the warming shelter. We've donated to suicide prevention. We've donated to arts and cultural centers. Most recently, last January, the Emerson Center for Arts and Culture was given the Christina Drake Service to Community Award and a $500 check. So you're exactly spot on. I tend to focus more on the work we do in the queer community, but the money that we raise is not limited strictly to queer causes. We do donate to anybody that has a need.
Yeah, that was something that I really appreciated about drag. And then the other way, you know, and we've already touched on this some, that drag is a social good, is, you know, providing safe spaces for people to, you know, experience their gender how they want to. But also I think, you know, giving people an example of what's possible for them. You know, that's kind of how I saw it. When I saw these beautiful trans people enjoying life to the fullest, and I'm talking about trans people that actually are good at drag and did perform drag, because I know some. That gave me a lot of hope, and it gave me something to aspire to and realize that, I can too also thrive. And I feel like that's something that would benefit people that are under 18, because I've had these cross-gender feelings since way before I was 18, since I was, basically a toddler. And having exposure to other people that kind of basically feel like I do would have been very beneficial to me. I wouldn't have felt so alone in my younger years, and I did. I felt very alone. So, having that example, is not a bad thing. I don't consider it grooming. I consider it support. And that's another way that I see drag as a social good that I wish other people could understand. And I try to explain it in so many ways, but I mean, maybe you could explain it a little bit.
So I think there's a couple of differentiations that I want to make here. Most of the shows that take place, most of the events that take place in Montana are 18 and up. They're not 21 and up, they're 18 and up because our community looks at it as 18-year-olds are now adults. They should have access to these spaces to do, exactly what you just described, to process those feelings, to learn, to grow. I've also noticed in recent years, with all of the attacks and tragedies that have been facing our communities, our shows have also become a place to grieve. And I know how weird that sounds because it's sort of a fun, engaging, exciting drag show. But there's a sense of community there that also creates space for people to process these really complex emotions we have with people that are like them or that are similar enough to them that they can process what they're feeling without having to translate what they're feeling, into cis normative language. So that's something else that happens. Now, when we're talking about the benefits of children being around drag, I also think you're spot on in your analysis, but it's to a different degree. And I think the way that I would illustrate that is by saying this. When I do all ages drag events, when I read at drag story hours, or we have shows that are all ages, sometimes I have my fingernails painted. And I will have little kids that come up and are so excited about my big sparkly dress or my wig or my nails being painted. And I've had little boys that have come up and they have their nails painted too. And they are so excited because they got to paint their nails, and that was something that was fun and cool for them. And what I think is important for these young people to see is, it's not necessarily the same processing of emotions. It's not the same grieving. It's not the same sort of deep dive into gender norms that we see at our adult shows. But if all those children got out of the show was, hey, if I want to paint my fingernails because it makes me happy, I should be able to do that. If that's all they take away from my show, that's perfect. Like you said, we're not grooming them. We're not trying to change their gender identity. We're not trying to lure them into some trap. All we're trying to do is teach them that if painting your nails brings you joy, then paint your nails. It doesn't matter if you're a little boy or a little girl, or you're not sure. Do the things that make you happy. Don't let society tell you you have to wear pants if a dress feels more comfortable to you, and vice versa. Don't wear a dress if pants feel more comfortable. Paint your nails, grow your hair out, do whatever it is that makes you feel most like yourself. And that's really the extent of it. We're not sitting children down and having deep dives into physiology, having deep dives into gender identity, having, discussions about gender affirming care and, all of the ways that they, honestly should have access to. But we're not even going that far. In Montana, we're just trying to encourage them to express themselves authentically.
That is so beautifully put.